Meet the Administrator, Part 4. Randy Babbitt is looking forward, not backward. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to today's special feature. Thanks for downloading us. In our final highlights from our new FAA Administrators Forum at EAA AirVenture Oshkosh, Randy Babbitt discusses airline pilot work rules, faces a guy who's waited months for an answer on his medical, and has an encouraging comment about user fees.
Hi, my name is Josh Guthrie. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am very pleased to finally see an administrator that has an aviation background. That's fantastic. Lately, I have really seen a shift, and I don't want anybody to take this like a personal attack in aviation, especially on the FAA side, but I'm not seeing cooperation from the FAA with general aviation. I have gone through 14 primary maintenance instructors over a year period in our operation, and trying to get field approvals like the gentleman was talking about over here have become a nightmare. I've had two things approved previously, and I want to, for 172, for example, I've had a wingtip approved twice now. Wanted to have it approved a third time for the same aircraft make and model of airplane, just a different serial number, and won't approve it. And so coming into a lot of problems, they're grounding aircraft of ours for example, for issues that they were wrong on. And it seems like they're just trying to create work to justify their job. So, and it's making life miserable for us.
Question?
The question is, what are you going to do between... I'm sorry, yes. The question is, what's going to happen with the FAA, and what can we do to create... I want to work with the FAA, but I don't want them to work with us, and I don't want six-month wait times on field approvals.
All right. The first off, let me point out for a number of the questions that you're going to bring up, I'm in a vehicle that, as far as I'm concerned, I have a windshield. I don't have a rear view mirror. I'm not looking backwards. Things have happened, and there's some issues. I mean, we went through a period of time where we were, you know, politically not able to have an administrator for a while, and that's difficult on the acting. It's difficult on the employees, the senior staff. But I will say we have started some things. You're going to see a new initiative. One of the things, we have a standardization initiative coming out that I think is going to address some of the issues you talk about. We can't have different interpretations, vastly different in different regions, and why did this one go through and that one not? And you should have an avenue. You should have a direct line to say, I don't want to find out about this in 3 months. I want to find out about it next week. And you should have that channel. We're going to try and develop that channel for you. On a more overarching basis, you know, I appreciate you want to work with the FAA. The FAA wants to work with you. And, you know, we can't fix things we don't know about. And so any time that you can provide us information, what you think is an exception, I look at this as almost our voluntary self-disclosure. Tell us, you know, there's more eyes and ears out there watching what we do than we can monitor for ourselves. So I welcome your input. And we'll do our darndest to try and straighten these things out and make it run more smoothly. And I think some of these initiatives that we're going to be rolling out over the next few months are going to be a big step in that direction.
Question right up here in the front row on the right.
Thank you. I'm Michael Stromberg with EAA Radio. And when I'm not participating in this event, I do fly as a commercial airline pilot. For 51 years, the rules for hours of service have not changed. You have flown under the same rules that I have. The NTSB for 20 years have been saying that these rules are outdated and dangerous. When will we see them updated?
It's a good question. when we, after the Colgan crash, and you're chatting with someone who tried to get those rules changed in 1992 through 1995, obviously without success, but I'm back. I'm being humorous there. It's a very serious question. It is a very serious question, and you know, we depended upon the industry. We tried to depend upon the industry to find a consensus. And I have to applaud the team within the FAA. I ask, you know, how quickly could we move And I was given a number, and I said, we need a regulation by then, not the beginning. We need the end by then. And to their credit, they have stepped up. We have created an aviation rulemaking committee. That committee is meeting 3 days a week. I gave them a 45-day deadline, and they have told me they will make it. From that, there is obviously some other things that follow on. We have different approvals that we have to have, including comments to the rule. But I look to have that rule changed for the first time in what will then be 52 years by the end of the year. And that's where we're headed.
Question over here.
Ron Bradley from Chicago. I have a third-class special issuance medical. My medical has to be renewed yearly because of it, and it expired on April 30th. At March 1st, according to the letter I received from the Aeromedical, I was to submit all of my documentation, which I did, for the reissuance. Here it is, the end of August, and I still don't have my medical, which is also hampering my ability to do my job.
The bad news, I don't have the answer, but the good news is the federal air surgeon is here.
I absolutely agree with you that waiting 5 months or maybe even 5 days is waiting too long. I apologize to you for you. I don't know the details of your case, but I do know right now down in the FAA building we have doctors down there, one of whom is Dr. Warren Silberman, who runs the medical certification division. They are lined up to look at your case and review your case and give you real-time information on when you're going to get your medical certificate. So right after this meeting, if you want to go down there, we will make sure you get lined up with Dr. Silberman, and he will take the information and work your case. And I don't know why we took 5 months. That is unacceptable, and so we'll fix it for you.
And when you get down there and see Dr. Silberman, say the federal air surgeon sent you.
After this meeting, before we leave here, if you will come up and give me your name and your card, I'll make sure that I get you linked up directly with Dr. Silberman, and we'll work your case for you.
That's great.
You knew we couldn't get out of this without hearing about user fees. More with Randy Babbitt in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wasp Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wasp GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt. New FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt is concluding his Q&A with an audience at AirVenture.
All right, sir. Kent Ewing, Virginia Beach, Virginia. I just flew for the last 6 months in Europe. I just want to let you know how inflexible that system is. How many times I had to land somewhere that wasn't in my pre-filed flight plan and wait 3 hours to get a new slot time, etc. It's a horrible system. But what is your opinion on, and there is no general aviation really in Europe. So what is your opinion on fee-based system?
Well, we have, when we look at the whole overall system, and that includes general aviation, the military use in the airspace, commercial, airline, all of that. All of it is running in what is unquestionably the safest, best, and most efficient system in the world. And we don't want to jeopardize that. The reality of it is that we do have to collect the money somewhere And how much of it is dependent upon and should be paid by the other taxpayers is a question. It's not a policy question I get to answer. I wish they would let me answer it. But the reality is that we move an incredible amount of our nation's goods and services, and even in general aviation, people getting to places where they have job sites. We fly equipment into little airports all around the country, an expensive part that the diesel engine won't run without. All of that is, you know, considered general aviation. But it does cost money, and we have a budget, and we divided that budget at one point by saying we could tax fuel over here, we could tax waybills and cargo, we could tax passengers and when they buy their tickets. The harsh reality, though, we've had a downturn in the economy. People aren't paying as much for the tickets. They're not flying as much. Fuel has gotten more expensive. Airplanes have gotten more efficient, so they burn less of it. All of that is pulling down the budget of where the money used to come from to fund our aviation system. So at the end of the day, we've got to step back and say, well, all right, who picks this up? Is it the rest of the American public? Should we ask the general fund to pay more taxes? Maybe that's an answer. But to directly answer and conclude here, I don't see anybody rushing to come in with user fees. We have a very good system. We have the best system in the world. What we are going to have to work together on is finding ways so that we do have the money to keep the system running. And you know, I will tell you, I just don't see any great charge out there. The administration did put in as a placeholder, okay, we'll look at user fees. I think it's just something to say, look, we do have to find some way to do it, but I think at the end of the day, your voices will be heard. We'll find a fair and equitable way that everybody can pay their share and continue to support the great system we have.
I'm Matt Thurber. We all know that general aviation's in a terrible recession right now. You know, if we flew more, there'd be more fuel taxes to pay for all this stuff. The FAA could generate a tremendous boost to this industry with a very simple, simple rule change. Mr. Babbitt, would the FAA consider eliminating the requirement for a medical certificate for private pilots?
You raise an interesting question. But let me try to put some context around your question. Let's start with the idea that you know, the pilot's license is a privilege, and it has requirements. You have to have a certain amount of training. You have to have a certain amount of standards. The airplane has standards. The other thing we are is very much so a risk-based business. Every time any one of us flies, you're doing a risk analysis. Is the weather good enough? Is my airplane inspected well enough? Is everything current? You do all the risk analysis. And what I would have to say before I could answer that question is, if I looked at the data, what number of people that we currently, by you know, requiring them to have a medical certificate, what number of them coming into the industry, does that change the risk analysis? At what level could we say, when you say they don't have to have a medical, at what level? What level of vision would they have? What level of reaction time, hearing? A lot of things that you've got to demonstrate that you have. And remember, we're talking about carrying other people. So we're not just putting the pilot at risk. We're talking about carrying other people with this pilot. So it's an interesting question. I don't argue with you or disagree that you might inspire some more people. What would concern me is the people that we would so inspire, are they going to produce a bigger risk to the system? And Doctor, if you'd like to comment on that, I mean, I'd welcome your thoughts as well. It's an interesting question.
We have gotten that question before, and I agree with what Randy said. Some people say, well, we don't have medical accidents, so it must be that we don't have need for medical examinations. But my belief is that there are certain people who don't even try to enter the system because they know that their medical capability doesn't make sense. They wouldn't meet our medical standards, so they don't even apply. If you look at the number of people that we deny and you look at the final denial statistics, we actually deny less than 0.1% of the people who apply for medical certificates. People with seizures and people with all kinds of things that shouldn't be flying, we are part of the process, as he said, about the safety process. So I think there's a need for a medical standard. I think that we do everything we can. If you look at what we did 30 years ago, People with heart attacks didn't fly. People with cancer didn't fly. People with all kinds of things that we now special issue for, because we feel even though they don't meet the standard, they're safe to be put in the airspace. I work for Peggy and I work for Randy, and we're in the all in the safety business. And we first say, every time I talk to people, I say, the first thing I worry about is the safety of the airspace and the safety of the people in it. After that, if you give that as a basic assumption, I do everything I can as a federal air surgeon from a medical perspective to get people in the air. We bend over backwards and we try. When we find a case that's unusual, we work with it and we work with the person. So I think there's a need for a standard. I think it's part of the risk-based safety system, and I support continuing to do it, but I also continue to support everybody I can get it safely in the air.
Well, Randy, we want to thank you for bringing your, not only yourself, but your team here. The conversation's been outstanding. We look forward to working with you and wish you nothing but the best as our new leader at FAA. Thank you, Randy Babbitt.
Thank you.
If there was a feeling in the air after this forum at Oshkosh, it was a sense that this guy is a pilot first and unafraid to share his real opinions on issues affecting general aviation, even when they're not exactly what the audience wants to hear. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.